Hello, listeners. In today's episode, I've discussed with Esther Cisneros, a seasoned professional with a rich background, spanning several countries and leading roles in media, advertising, technology, and e-commerce. From her early days in advertising sales at CNN, to her transformative years in New York working for Estee Lauder, and her current position at Google as head of e-commerce and retail sales for the German market. Esther explains the products and solutions that Google offers to the retail and e-commerce market, with a focus on AI and data analytics. She addresses the challenges and concerns around privacy regulations and emphasizes the importance of implementing privacy solutions to maintain conversion and measurement. The interview also touches on various industry topics, including the impact of video advertising and how small brands can compete by focusing on their competitive advantages. Esther's approach to sales, her insights on video strategy, and her reflections on her career achievements and personal aspirations add further depth into the dialogue. So let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Esther, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Eitan, and I'm delighted to be here with you and connecting within the industry. Thank you very much for having me. Very happy to be here.
Yes, it's a pleasure, and thank you for your time. I know you are currently in Dublin, Ireland, right? How are things there?
Everything's good. We have a sunny day, which is perfect for the weekend. You know, the week was a little bit grayish, but we have a beautiful weekend coming along. So, yeah, very happy about the sun.
Is it the sun from the window there, or it's lightning?
This is the sun.
This is the sun
next to the window. And we were very lucky with St. Patrick's Day. It was also sunny. I think the Irish were very, very
happy
about that one. And now going into Easter, hopefully it's supposed to be good. So, you know, it's important here. So we'll take the sun. So, yeah, all good with the day and the coming weekend.
Amazing. So, Esther, I know your background, right? Spain, US, now in Ireland because you work in Google and you're overseeing the German market. So let's put things into order. I would love for you to spend some time introducing you and your background, because I know you have a media and entertainment background, you know, advertising background from the brand side, and also technology companies. So I think it's quite diverse and really interesting. So it's a good place to start.
Thank you. So thank you for that, Eitan. So I'll, happy to summarize a little bit, then you can ask me further questions. But I've been working at this point for like 22, 24 years. I'm originally from Spain. So I like saying that I've done the 50-50. I lived in Spain for 21, 22 years, and the other 22, I've been on the go. So it's my 50-50 in life, but very close to Spain and, love it and try to, you know, always stay very connected to my home country. But yes, I started my career working in Germany for a few years. I then worked 4 years in France, then 15 years in New York, and now I've been in Ireland for about two. So quite international. And not only where I've been based, but also I've always worked, wherever I was, with other markets, right? Always in sometimes local roles, but very often regional or global roles. So four major chapters in my career. That's how I like to talk about them. And it helps me now with the perspective to, bring it a little bit in order. I started my career in advertising sales, working for CNN in Germany. It was my first role, very fresh out of the university. I loved it. Very international from the beginning because we were selling all CNN properties, digitally, TV, on the ground events, really the whole CNN ecosystem, which is not only the TV channels but much bigger than that, and into international and global advertisers from Germany, from Austria, from Switzerland, actually. So did that for a couple of years, then moved with some more responsibility to the French market. So continued to work at CNN for new industries, lots of luxury, as you can imagine, and but still cars, energy providers. So the French market was also very interesting. It was also South Africa, the French-speaking markets in Northern Africa, and Benelux. So really French-speaking territories, very interesting piece as well. I moved to the media agency side, where I worked at GroupM for almost 10 years, actually, and then moved again to the marketing side, client side, and worked in beauty at Estee Lauder, amazing, amazing company, the Estee Lauder company, for 10 years more. So that's my third chapter, how I call it, and then wonderful opportunity with Google to really go deeper into technology, into AI, into data, which is a challenge I was looking for myself, for my brain, for my career. So that's my fourth technology chapter in after sales, media agency, marketing side, technology. That's how now with the perspective of, you know, the years, how I distinguish a little bit for me the evolution and the different things I've done.
Yes. And what are the things that you feel in terms of the roles that you took? Obviously, you changed not a lot, but every position was quite substantial. And I believe for you and for the company as well. What are the major things that you took from each one of those companies and roles?
Great question. So so with the perspective now, I think I'm very, very grateful for having started my career in sales, which I think maybe not you're 20, 21, 22, maybe you don't go in sales right away. You want to do other things and it happened a little bit by chance because I absolutely wanted to go back to Germany. That's what I wanted, what I was looking for. I had studied there a year at university. I had met so many friends. I had so much fun. It was an amazing year. And so after graduation, I wanted to go back to Germany. And then I looked for a job. And of course, it was a very nice job. I was very happy about that. But it was really, I saw Germany, CNN, like, I'll do that, of course.
Where do I sign? Yeah.
Of course. It looks awesome. I go. And it was really, I thought it was going to be more media planning or, of course, it's advertising, but it was a commercial role. So I think, and it was not easy for me. At the beginning, I was thinking I was still doing an internship. So, I had to accelerate big time. Wow. The first 1-2 years in Frankfurt were not that easy, but I'm so grateful till today because you sell every single day at every single job, whether it's a sales job or you think it's not a sales job, but it is partly. So I think doing that, not easy conversations. How do I read the room? Is this an individual decision? Is it a collective decision? Do I push now or do I give a week? You know, I think those are things that you learn with time. Of course, everyone, you know, at some stage in their careers is like good at that. I just think that's something I did maybe better than maybe other people earlier because I was, you know, that was really my first job. So very grateful to today. And I have a commercial lens for every role I do, for everything I do, because I'm you know, more aware of that maybe than other people. So that's what I would maybe take from that one. It happened a little bit by chance, but I love that I took that with me. The media agency, very grateful to GroupM. I worked very hard. They were very good to me for 10 years as well. So very grateful to this beautiful company as well. I left CNN to work more, travel less, earn less, go into the media agency side. Not old, but I was, you know, I started at media agencies, I think with 25, 26 versus that's maybe more the first job you do, right? You start at agency and then maybe at some point you want to do something else. I had been quite comfortable at CNN for a few years and, you know, I could have, you know, continued there maybe, but I'm like, no, let's go to the media agency to learn a ton and work hard. Yes. But, you know, if I want to go client side, get to the marketing side to own a brand, drive a brand in the future, I do think the media agency is probably an amazing school and almost like a must in this journey.
Yeah.
So I did that. And, you know, I started quite junior, actually. So you get all the data analysis, all the orchestration, coordination tasks that are, you know, maybe less, you know, less valuable apparently. But like, I learned so much and I worked very hard and I leaned into it because it was a very conscious decision for me. So that one didn't happen by chance. I left CNN to do that and I completely understood. Mm-hmm. And then I knew, okay, like, take everything you can, work hard, and because, you know, you're on this journey. So I came to the agency with this mindset, and I think that versus, oh, it's so hard and it's a lot of work. You know, it is often. Agency work is hard, but I really enjoy it. So I guess the intentionality and that I was very aware of, it's going to be tough, but I'm here because I'm on this journey and that's what I want to do. And I learned a ton. One of the things I like the most is being exposed to, you know, multiple companies, multiple industries. I certainly worked on, you know, 3-4 accounts at the same time, more or less. So that's quite, you know, when I was servicing both Michelin and Chanel, well, those are two quite different, you know, companies. And I was, you know, my brain was, you know, developing that agility. So that's what I would take maybe from like that agency experience. I had increased levels of responsibility. I ended up being transferred and promoted from Paris to New York. And when I arrived at MEC New York and then Mindshare New York, to work on American Express and Campbell's Soup Company, and you know, at a more senior level, those were tough but fantastic experiences that have completely changed me. So, I love that I was really, you know, representing the international business to Campbell's board, and you know, big responsibility with a lot of teams behind me. But I absolutely love that experience. Something that I'm still grateful for today is that Campbell's Soup Company made a very, very specific decision to bring someone from the MEC network, which turned out to be me after many interviews. So very specifically looking for a non-US international media expert who would come to Philadelphia to drive the international business with them. And I'm where I am also thanks to some of those decisions.
Wow, interesting.
I'm an international expert in New York. There are many, a wonderful, wonderful international expert. Mm-hmm. This intentionality about whom can we get from EMEA, from Asia to come to us. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. But, you know, I was also, wow, big change. But that's how I came to the US, which absolutely shaped me. So I guess this intentionality about I went into the agency knowing what I wanted to do. So that's that one. And then when I felt ready to join a company, a brand that I'm feel something about, that I'm passionate about, that I Estee Lauder, you know, happened. And it certainly has been my, you know, a major milestone in my career. I came in as a media expert because what I was doing at the media agency, I came with that lens, but really, really wrote a job description every 2 years. There was so much opportunity. Really built around product marketing. And again, I'm talking now about 12 years ago at this point. The consumer marketing, the go-to marketing was less developed, not only at this company, but really broadly in fashion, in beauty, in every major. So yes, I had a scope, but I'm like, I want a consumer scope. So this is what I'm doing now. Fine, I'm starting here. You hired me to do this, but can I drive CRM? Can I drive influencer marketing? Can I drive in-store technology and the e-commerce business and PR releases and crisis management, which we also have, and social escalations? And can I have a consumer scope? And of course, I was there 10 years and the team around me built, the team around me grew, whether they reported into me or not, it didn't matter. Expanding this consumer capabilities from media. And I really loved it. I'm very grateful that after 10 years, you know, the Estee Lauder brand was investing at 70%, you know, of their spend really in digital media. When I joined, it was really the 20-25%, not even that. So, and that's quite a big evolution for, you know, 5-6 years of work, 5-7 years of work. So there is that. At the end, and a full setup of product marketeers and consumer marketeers, and really them working together versus, you know, product marketeers and one person doing some digital and one person doing some CRM and random, not even talking. I'm really glad with others around me that we built this setup of full marketing across 10 years. You also need time. But, you know, I was very, very happy there. And it had been 15 years in New York already. For my family. And when the Google opportunity happened, I was very, very excited about going deeper into technology, into AI. I had been reading CMOs, interviews in all trade press and all, you know, for my first few years in New York, they were only talking about influencer marketing. All CMO interviews were about that somehow. Mm-hmm. And then it switched a little bit to all CMOs talking about data and analytics and connecting silos and then a little bit of AI. And I'm like, this is what all CMOs are talking about. Like, how can I, you know, learn or do even more of that. And then this Google opportunity happened. It was a good way to, you know, be back in Europe, at least for, you know, for a few years, for a little while, and go deeper into technology for sure. And also into a market. My role at Estee Lauder was global. And while I absolutely loved it, working with, you know, 35 countries around the world or even more, I was also excited again by, you know, going deeper into one market, owning a local P&L, and just getting closer to consumers in that one market. And Germany is a big market for Google. It's, you know, the third, fourth market globally for them in terms of revenue. So it's also, you know, a significant market. So it all worked out. And I appreciate the agility of local roles, regional roles, global roles, and back, right? I've done the back and forth a couple of times in my career, and I think it gives you brain agility, and it also makes you stronger in a global role if you've been in the local shoes. And it's also, you know, you can better manage locally if you understand where your global team is coming from. Yes. And I've done that a couple of times. It's not easy, but I appreciate also that complexity and how I've grown through that.
Yes. I mean, Germany is a very interesting e-commerce market. I think I've, you know, gathered some data. I think it is like the sixth or seventh largest in the world, right? Today, around 90 billion. But it's going to grow to substantially to around 132 billion, right, by Statista. But yeah, what's more interesting is that it's the digital penetration, or people are purchasing and shopping online. It's going to increase to like 74%, which is really, really high. So from the Google perspective and from what you're learning and knowing about the market, give us some insights about German market in terms of e-commerce, and what do you see are the major trends over there?
What I see. So thank you for your question. So I'm a big fan of Germany in general. I've been all my career. It's the biggest economy in Europe. Probably won't change for a little while. And it is really after the UK, in EMEA or in Europe, really, the market giving the tone, right, in terms of size, not only for Google. I'm sure it's the same for, you know, for the other big digital tech companies. So Germany, one of the things I really like about Germany, of course, you have the biggest companies, like you have them in every market, but the Germany strength and really differentiation is the huge, but I mean huge amount of mid-sized companies. Mm-hmm. It's known in Europe that this mid segment or middle market or whichever name, it's really known that it's a success for the country. It's a much stronger segment than in France, in Spain. And so these are the companies from 10 employees to 500 employees. It's the sheer number of them. There are many more than in other markets. And this comes already from their education system. You know, they have a much stronger from school. Everyone goes to school in every market, but like in Germany, yeah, there is a school, but then there are many, many types of education and of, training systems to get people, which, for example, I compare with Spain, where I'm from, there is not that. Everyone does school, university. It's a much more linear. In Germany, early on, already at the 14, 15, 16 years old, there are many, many ways to be trained in a skill and to learn different things so that when people are 18, 20, whatever they are, they really can do a lot of things in big, medium-sized companies. Not everyone is college degree, and then I go into an office. So there are many more companies of that segment, of that size. And that's actually where I'm working right now with Google. And it's the opportunity there is so big. All these companies want to, you know, if they have 10 employees, they want to grow to 20. If they have 100, they want to grow to 200. And if they have 400, they want to grow to 1,000, right? But there are so many of them. And it's a beautiful opportunity in all segments, really, all industries. It's not only energy, it's not only cars, it's not only sports, furniture, apparel, every travel is quite strong in Germany as well. So anyway, that's something I knew before because I've lived there and I know the market, but now working really one-on-one with this mid-sized segment companies, I see it even more. And, you know, they're cautious. It's a cautious culture. It's a cautious culture. Privacy regulations are extremely important for them. They may be slow. Every single person in the company needs to understand. But then at some point they go, and when they go, they fully adopt and they go a little bit faster there. So it's about trust, as it always is. education, understanding. They don't want to be first, but they don't want to, they want to be best. So there is that angle there. But when they go with you, they get it. You know, you're growing their business, and then they will come along. So that's quite important. Yes. Those cultural nuances, but you know, some observations there, but lots of opportunity in the market.
Yes. I think it's really, you know, I think the same. I've been working in this market for the last, I don't know, more than 20 years. And you're right. It's a structured process. Everyone, you know, it's a committee type of procurement, and people need to be aware and learn a lot of things before making a decision. But they are taking this innovation type of decision-making process. So they are really open to adapt new technologies. And, you know, we come from Israel, which is like the tech country, and there are so many startups, there are so many technology companies, and we've been always very lucky in being successful in the German market because they appreciate the innovation, right? And they are happy to spend the resources and the energy to explore, to evaluate, and to take their platform to the next level. So yeah, I think it's really, really interesting. And the fact that you mentioned the mid-market, also definitely a huge opportunity. So from the Google perspective, share with us, what are the type of products or services or solution that you are pushing into the market, and where do you see the opportunities in terms of those different product lines?
So, at my level, I spent quite a lot of time with customers, inspiring and educating. Of course, we're selling. You know, I'm in a commercial role. In the team, there are, you know, frontline sellers who are really more into the, you know, let me check your account to see where I can optimize, right? And, you know, are we selling YouTube? Are we selling demand gen? Are we selling Performance Max products? So all that setup, we have it, and we do bring it to advertisers. I certainly spent more time with inspiring, educating, demystifying, you know, about AI and about, you know, privacy and, you know, where is my data, all those conversations, which are difficult. I mean, I have them, that's my job, to help and support there. One interesting piece is now about AI. So many clients asking, how can AI help me? So first question, what should my AI strategy be? What's my AI strategy? What are the AI tactics? What do I need to do there? So, and I try to turn the question as in, you don't need an AI strategy. You need a strategy. What is your strategy? I don't know. So you tell me, what is your strategy? And then we'll tell you how AI can help. Strategy, yeah. With you know, is your issue that you only have 30% returning customers and you need to increase from 30 to 50, otherwise you won't break even or you won't grow 3 years in a row, whatever it is, right? So that's your issue. So your strategy is to increase that, you know, that they come back at 50% rate versus 30. So with AI, how can you create audiences, you know, and how can you capture signals? Because when someone is going to churn, when someone is not going to, like, you have signals, right? They go to the site, but they don't add to cart. They don't open the email. So you all of these, you know, and they are like, okay, alert, this person is going to disappear within the 6 months, right? So use AI to gather your signals and then develop a specific churn strategy so that they don't churn, that they, you know, you can save, you won't save all of them, but you can get a few back. So you have a strategy, and then AE helps you with that strategy versus what's my AI strategy. That doesn't really, right? That's an example, but there are many others. You know, you want to go into a new market. So how can AI help you, you know, with much more data than before, with modeling, you know, if France and Poland and Russia worked for you this way, Belgium may work this way. You know, you can model, you can anticipate, you cannot anticipate, but you can predict with a certain level of confidence. And so that's how AI helps your strategy. So there are dozens of examples. Every client wants to, you know, to do something different, or they have different issues. And so we spend a lot of time, you know, giving that mirror back, and then they get it, they understand it. And then they say, okay, these are my three things. And now what, you know, what do I need to do? How can you help me? And Google can help in many ways, you know, with data tracking from Google Analytics 4 to, you know, if it's about reaching new consumers, you know, demand generation products. So that's then the lens that we go with.
Yes, yes. And what I see from other, like in 2024 post-pandemic, right, like in the US and other markets, companies, brands are zero in on their core business, analyzing everything, try to utilize data to cut losses on non-profitable activities. It can be products, SKUs, markets, different type of services. What's the general, let's say, macro conditions or the general probably opportunities, but also some of the challenges and the pains that you hear specifically from customers in Germany?
So the opportunities, I mean, the opportunity, I guess, I think despite all the, you know, mayhem in the world, we certainly have a lot of very tough things going on. I think I just love to see still the entrepreneurial spirit, people mainly, most part of it, knowing I can grow my business, I can grow my industry. Like, it's very positive. I think still we are, you know, COVID is behind us. And yeah, it's tough out there. But like, you know, this positivity, at least, again, Germany is you know, it's a thriving market. And they are very critics with themselves. Like, oh, Germany is slow and very bureaucratic and very whatever. But they are still, to me, they are still doing, you know, very well and leaning in. So I mean, that's very positive that people are still optimistic, doing, entrepreneurs are still leaning in, and that consumers, you know, for Google, for example, Black Friday, the Cyber Week last year was a very, very successful. Of course, Cyber Week always, you know, sales go up for also competitors and for us for sure. Mm-hmm. Google really did very well. I mean, not we did not. Consumers, our partners, did very well. So even more so than expected. So that, of course, is positive, gives you a little bit of sentiment, you know, and gives you motivation. So these moments, these occasions are still driving business and being positive. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I think threats or less fun. I think many people are concerned and about privacy regulations changing all the time, and what is my priority, what do I need to do? And then often marketing teams aligned, even sales, even CEOs aligned, but the legal departments, you know, of course it's their role being more cautious, and but that's why not only Google, but the whole, you know, privacy sandbox partners, all the partners in that very important initiatives, and our competition needs to be educating and reassuring. And there are challenges, but there are lots of opportunities and solutions in place. Google's privacy solutions are, you know, completely safe and meant to, you know, to not lose conversions, have a strong measurement in place. I mean, this is what the solutions are doing. You need to implement them on your site. But but we have all these tools to, you know, when third-party cookies, you know, go away, which is happening very soon, that you really gather the maximum amount of first-party data, and you just don't have conversion gaps, you know, which you will have if you don't have these solutions in place. So adopted or implemented. So that's, I don't see it as a threat, but I see that it's a concern in the market and for marketeers. And so we spend a lot of time and efforts communicating, advocating, and improving. I mean, you know, Google is currently, you know, constant mode, the advanced version of, or the V2 version, you know, like we are constantly improving the privacy solutions as well, going with the landscape. But if you're 6 months late there or 6 months behind, it is an issue. You are going to lose conversions. You won't be able to measure profit, like you cannot retarget audiences. So that is, you know, one of my biggest role at manager level with the German market to like really like here, right? We want to sell, but don't buy anything if you don't have these privacy solutions in place. You won't be able to measure, so everybody will lose, right? So that's a big topic right now.
Yes, that's definitely like a foundation for everything.
It's a foundation. I call it measurement foundations. Every conversation, privacy is sales. So measurement foundation is right now the foundation of everything we're doing.
Yeah. What are the tips that you can provide to brands? Because I tell you what I mean. We see what's happening, for example, with Temu, right? Spending so much on advertising and actually, you know, taking the market. And I just read a report that, like, in, I don't know, span of like 7-8 months, they took the markets from Shein, for example, and other Chinese manufacturers, providers. And so, yeah, the big guys are winning because they can spend a lot of money, right? So there are no chances for smaller brands or mid-sized companies to compete. Same with SEO. It's the big guys' game, right? I mean, winning those keywords, winning the intent signals in terms of the tools that they can implement. They have a longer-term vision. And if you look at like new arrivals like TikTok, right, people are excited about it because anyone can win. It doesn't matter how many followers you have, and you can go viral, you can expose yourself organically even in a much more efficient way. So I would love to hear your thought again from the Google perspective about those different categories, and perfectly referring to this market that you're attracting, you know, the mid-market or even smaller than that. What are the tools that Google can provide, or what are the messages that you provide, and how they can differentiate themselves in this, you know,
big place? Yes, never a dull moment in the industry. So Temu and Shein both, but even more Temu or so was and is affects really all the partners I talk to on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a Temu privacy conversation, Temu conversation, or CPP, right? CPP is rising strongly. So, and here I always smile a little bit, like, okay, Google doesn't do. Don't dictate prices. It's just that the industry is, you know, is active and doing, and there is more competition. Yes. There's not, you know, Google doesn't have a rate card. So mm-hmm. sometimes I find myself reminding people about that. But okay, so we obviously Google does not dictate pricing, but when such a player comes as Temu, and they were, you know, after the UK, Germany was their market in Germany, in Europe, now it's, well, Spain and others, but they were really, and they still are going after Germany. So, and for Cyber Week, so that was tough. So, so how we support our partners? So, we our thinking there is you can't probably not compete on pricing. So that's something you cannot do. So if you cannot do, what can you compete on? So how can you through AI multiply infinitely your number of assets to speak mm-hmm. to quality messaging, or we ship on time guaranteed, which Temu doesn't, or returns or customer service available 24 hours a day, which Temu doesn't because they are in China or they are not mm-hmm. even anywhere. So mm-hmm. how can you multiply your creative assets, your copy, your messaging to speak to the things you can do? So that, because at the same time, we're seeing the number of one-time buyers on Temu, on Shein is very, very high. Obviously, it's very cheap. Someone tries it out all the time. Do some come back? Yes. Do a lot of not come back? Yes. Mm-hmm. So how can you? So first of all, don't stop advertising, which some would go, oh, CPCs are crazy, I'm going to stop advertising. So don't, because mm-hmm. when that person does not buy on Temu again, you want to continue to be there so yeah. that they can go back to you. You should still be there and promoting and advertising. So first thing, you know, continue with your thing. How do you need to adjust, though? It would be irresponsible to say continue doing the same thing. No. How you should adjust? Okay. What can you look still at your competitive advantage? Are there any certain niche product categories that you can still win because you're the only one who can provide them? Or again, for Cyber Week, for Christmas, you are the only one because you ship from Germany most of the time. Germans would ship from Germany or from Belgium, whatever, from France. You don't ship from China, right? So you can still ship on time for mm-hmm. gifting an occasion, birthdays, and for Christmas and for, you know, New Year's Eve. You know, you can still ship on time and guaranteed versus they can't in theory. And you also have this, you know, for a lot of German companies, can you enhance your copy, your website with produce in Germany, quality tested in Germany? You know, I cannot make it up what it is for each company, but what is it that you can highlight that maybe you haven't highlighted before, but now, you know, you'd better highlight. So we gave guidance, thoughts, thinking to all our partners. We still do ongoing. And then each needs to you, you know, what's your strategy, stand up for your strategy, and then execute accordingly. But we do share data as well about, yeah, CPCs have risen, but, you know, it's a one-time buying business for now, not 100%, but, you know, a big share. And you know, just continue to show up, even if you need to adjust your strategy, because going away or shutting down campaigns, or it's not, you know, you want to be there to catch them back when they, you know, yes, your platform, hopefully, for whichever reason. So those are some of the thoughts.
Yes. I think that probably in this point in the episode, it's a good good step to talk about maybe the video strategy of companies, right? So I know you have a lot of video experience as well. Definitely what we used to call once broadcast, right?
Yes.
That's like it's a word of for dinosaurs, I guess. But now, and I know you also did like live shopping in China with Estée Lauder, but video is probably something that is like booming all over. Definitely, you know, the marketing budgets today are allocated more and more for video, primarily for creation of content with influencers and content creators. And obviously the TikTokification of everything, right? Short form, you know, really small bites of content. And I know that obviously YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. So what are the, I mean, how you, Google are analyzing or helping companies or use video more and more, definitely on YouTube, but also the creation of video. And again, I'm asking maybe from SEO perspective, maybe from, you know, site authority perspectives, what are your thoughts on video creation specifically, you know, for e-commerce?
So, I'm not going to dwell again on the importance of video, and you just said it, how big YouTube and all the platforms are also, but So we know that about 50%, depending on the data, it's from 40 to 60, that about 50% success of a campaign on YouTube depends on the quality of the creative. So I'm very often telling advertisers, as much as I need your business and you need to be out there on YouTube advertising and everything, but like, we should not start if you don't have at least this minimum in terms of best practices or in terms of sizes, because otherwise, you know, you're not going to win, and then Google won't win either with you, right? We're winning here together. So critical video. And I think they do understand. Sometimes they still go like, it's good enough, let's do the campaign and see how it goes. And I'm like cautious there, you know, I'm torn there. I want the campaign, but above all, I want it to work. So it's the right thing to do. So, I mean, with Google thanks to YouTube, creative capabilities from Google and from YouTube are quite strong. I mean, we have, creative services teams who can, we do workshops all the time. We do creative workshops all the time for what is, you know, we call it the ABCD framework. You know, what are the best practices coming from billions literally of videos on YouTube that we've analyzed for, you know, success in different categories. So what are our ABCD guidelines there that you then take? And of course you need to execute them yourself, but you know, we have that upscaling education going on all the time. Once you know what you want to do, the robust set of creative services at YouTube, at Google, is quite strong, from translation to editing in many different ways. We cannot really go and shoot a video for you, but if you have images, we can build videos and strong videos. If you have a video, we can change it quite substantially in many different ways, with copy, with voiceover, with sizing, with length. We can adjust it to different platforms. You know, there's YouTube, there's YouTube Shorts. I mean, there are many different types of videos also on our platform. So all that is quite strong. And I personally think it's stronger than most advertisers know or think. I was surprised when I joined Google about, we need to talk even more about this. You know, it's not only a media powerhouse. It's like, with YouTube, it's quite a strong creative house as well here. And how can we even talk more about it and say it more often? And so I also spent quite a lot of time to advertisers saying, okay, like, we love that you want to do this campaign. Let us do this first, and we can do 80% of it for you, not 100. Uh-huh. And do all that much. I think when I was at Estee Lauder, I certainly exploited everything I could for partners. like Google, and but also Condé Nast and even Pinterest. I mean, all these platforms have dialed it up creatively, strongly, because they know that so much of the campaign success depends on the quality of the assets. And some clients or companies are coming up faster than others, right? So I would say overall, all media houses, all technology houses have much more than before. And my call is for advertisers to go and use it more. You know, they ask and we offer it, but like it should be happening even more, I think. So yes. If you're an advertiser, my tip to you is ask more, demand more, expect more. Media and technology houses, I think they can really do more than they realize.
Okay, that's a very, very good feedback. Thank you for that. I mean, there is a lot of buzz and hype around short form and TikTok, right? But in parallel, I read the latest reports. There is also growth on YouTube long form video. So
this a lot.
Always growing. Also long form, there is a place for long form, which is very, very important. There's definitely a place for short form. So these are coexist together. So Esther, how do you see the sales role? I mean, many things have changed, obviously, in the last two decades. Many things are still around. What do you think is the definition or the best description, a job description of a sales leader, you know, these days?
Of a sales leader? I mean, it's a good question. I believe I know what you're asking, because I mean, I'm in sales, or it still sometimes is like a bad thing. Oh, I don't want to be in sales. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're also selling, but okay. You know, like that's a little bit my perspective. Yeah. Everyone is selling in some shape or form, but I hear you. I mean, not everyone is like, oh, I'm in sales. It doesn't sound great. And I'm not, yes, I'm in a commercial role, but for me, I'm working for, I mean, one of the strongest technology companies in the world. We're not the only one, but we're certainly one of the small trio or whatever shaping really the landscape globally. So, and through technology, we enable companies. That's what we do. We enable companies. So am I selling? Yes, but I'm also selling something that I absolutely believe that it's helping you. If not, I wouldn't sell you this, because I have other things to sell that, you know, those would help you more. So when you have such a robust and strong portfolio and ecosystem, everyone can benefit from pieces of it or some from all of it. And so I would personally, I would not sell anything or advise on something that I, you know, don't believe to be true. I also think at Google, one of the reasons why I was hired and all the colleagues like me were hired is, you know, very purposeful external hiring at senior level. So someone coming from, you know, from the agency, from the at Estee Lauder, you know, I compared and I, you know, dozens of media plans from dozens of partners from, you know, and I often discuss TikTok and TV. There are a lot of TV broadcasters in you don't want 100% yes. share of voice. I wouldn't do it as a company. So I would not advise that either to any of my partners. I think it's too risky and you always want to test and learn somewhere, right? I do believe for many, many reasons, Google's ecosystem can be the majority partner or the strongest partner for many, many advertisers. But I would not advise on something that I at Estee Lauder would have rejected or would have, you know, would not have done. So I think that gives you, you know, the trust, the authenticity that certainly helps with advertisers because, well, you're genuine. And it's a very clear business model. Google doesn't have rate cards and Google doesn't sign contracts, you know, at the agency. I got an order signed by my advertiser, right? So you whatever you do, you're buying the five New York Times insertions and, you know, you bought this. So now you're on at Google. We don't have contracts or invoices. There is not such a thing. So we are daily on the spot. Is the campaign today performing? Yes or no? What are we changing for tomorrow? Tomorrow. Is the campaign performing today? Yes or no? What are we changing for tomorrow? So I love that accountability, that sense of every day we're on the hook, you know, and the business model is very clear. The company grows, we grow. The company grows, they will invest more. I mean, it's quite obvious. The company doesn't do well, Google will lose too. So I love that partnership that I think is maybe not there everywhere with other media partners or technology partners. So that works well for me. And that's why I feel I can and I should absolutely make very genuine recommendations and believe in what I'm selling because, well, if it doesn't work, I will know tomorrow and I will pay for it tomorrow. You know, so
yes.
I'm suggesting and advising and selling, it better work. So it has to be what I really believe in. That's how I see my sales role today. And again, to all those who say I'm not in sales, I'm not, again, to some extent, even if it's 10%, you have a sales component in your job, whatever it is that you're doing. So that's also a thought, a challenge that I try to give many people.
Yes. I mean, we are all in sales. And I mean, I've been doing this probably for the last 2 decades. And so what you're saying, you're analyzing the opportunity. You try to understand the customers and you mentioned before about sharing the strategy, what you're trying to achieve, right? And then you can come up with more of a consultative type of approach. Hey, we believe this and this and this will fit, right? And now let's talk about how do we engage around these topics, right? So I think today in an era where like every week we have a new release of something new, right? And it's probably AI is just one part of it, but agility and acceleration and releasing software versions like on a daily even basis. And we know that the people who are purchasing, they made like 80% of the way through research online and colleagues and communities that they have, and they approach the vendor that they want to work with. But you know, our role, I think, is definitely those of us on the customer facing side is to educate, to update, and to probably to build a nice package around specific requirements. Wow, great, Esther! It's been amazing. Thank you so much for all the great insights and value. I would love to know what are the things that you are proud of in your career.
Things I'm proud of. I'm certainly very grateful. So I'll tell you what I'm proud about, but I'm certainly very grateful. So I guess I am proud that I'm above all grateful and curious, and that I have so much to learn, and there is so much opportunity wherever I look at in the industry. So many companies, so many industries and areas growing. So I do have that curiosity and eagerness. So I guess I'm proud of that. Even if I worked 24 years, there's just so much. So, and I do have that, I think, energy, sparkle, and because I love what I do and working with consumers. So I guess I'm proud of this mindset that I have and that I maintain and that I nurture. So that's one thing. I'm certainly proud of having done quite well in New York for 15 years. It was not always easy. It is not always easy to thrive in the US or in New York, as a foreigner and as a female Hispanic. And so I'm proud of having done well there on the agency side, at Estee Lauder. I had my 2 children there, again, 15 years is a long time and a few cycles. And I guess I am proud about having done that well, I would think. And I think I'm also proud about how I really enjoy lifting others. I mentor quite a few students, junior professionals, even a little bit more senior professionals, different levels from my university in Spain, but also from New York, ex-colleagues. So I'm sometimes I stretch myself maybe too much, and I'm like, but I'm so grateful, and things have gone well overall, and I absolutely want to pass it on and lift others as I, you know, at some point I will exit the workforce, and you know, the new generation is everything we'll have, and we'll have to deal with, you know, AI and all the developments and microeconomics, and so, you know, whatever I can do for anyone now, I'm doing. And so I'm proud of that as well, I guess, that I give energy and also get energy from those interactions. And I do make time very intentionally to accommodate as many of those as I can. So that's also I'm happy about. And also, I'm also proud that I got into Google. I have to say, you know, yes, I know I have my CV and my accomplishments, and I'm very proud of that. But, you know, I think it's 10 times more difficult to go to Google than to go to Harvard. And I mean, there are stats that I don't even, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I made it for a reason, but it's not easy. And I guess I am proud of that. So yeah, that's also what I see as an achievement, I have to say.
Yes, I mean, well done. It's an amazing career, and the great things are still yet to come, right?
Exactly. So, new chapters.
Yeah. New chapters, of course. Esther, now this is the part where you share with us a fun fact about yourself that most of your professional network are not aware of.
fun fact. So, okay, fun or weird? I don't know. Or I guess weird, so it will be fun. So I do something sometimes. It's weird. But I've always done it somehow. I don't know why. So not daily or not often, but I do sometimes read newspapers or a newspaper article digitally or on paper, actually, that is a few days old. And I think that's quite weird. And I think it started in Germany, New York, you know, so busy with work, with the children, with everything. And then a newspaper was lying around. I took it 2 days old and I wouldn't discard it. So I said, okay, let me read a couple of articles, you know. So I think it was like, because I was just behind with life and with the world. So yeah. And then I started getting into it. So it's not that I proactively look for an old newspaper, but when I see one or a Time magazine from last month, read one or two articles, because by then, obviously, you will have know what has happened. And it helps me re-engineer. Oh, this was the statement. Apple was saying these were their three options with the union workers. Uh-huh. Whatever it is, political or business. And then, or Elon Musk was like here all over the place. 1 week later, what happened? You know, and it helps me sometimes work a little bit backwards. Oh, had they known this, maybe this would have been. Or like, this is an outcome that it was nowhere in the New York Times, and look at, and how did it happen then in the end? And again, I don't proactively look for all newspapers, but when I can, I do read one or two articles like that and then work out for me, what would they have done if they had known this? Or was this expected, unexpected? What were the chances? Did anyone anticipate this in any way? Or was this nowhere? Oh, wait, this person had said it and everyone shut the person down, but it is what happened. What does that mean about decision making? So I try to, you know, and I've kept the habit. Again, I don't have all newspapers here, but when I do one, I would take it and I read a couple and then I leave it, right? There's so much to read about today. Wow. But that's a weird habit that I guess it's fun, but it helps me. It does. It's interesting to do that.
Interesting. Yes. I'm going to try it for the next week.
Try it out.
Right.
You know, yes, with elections, right. When an election has happened, take a newspaper or a magazine from 1 month before or 1 day or one week. Or whatever, and see, oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, no, I don't get it. Like, oh, wow, yes, that's true. It's not true. Like,
it's like a post.
Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. It's like post-mortem analysis. Or,
yeah, it helps me think sometimes in different ways. So, fun fact, weird fact.
Thank you for sharing, Esther, and really appreciate the time. It's been a pleasure to host you here.
Thank you for having me, Ita. I'm very happy to be here. And thank you again for bringing the industry together and connecting people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.